I'm Marty Moscone, and welcome to Radio Times. President-elect Donald Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin spoke by phone on Monday, saying that it was time to normalize relations between the two countries and pursue constructive cooperation on the broadest possible range of issues. That's a quote. Trump spoke admiringly about Putin while on the campaign trail. Here's a clip from the Commander-in-Chief Forum in September.
If he says great things about me, I'm going to say great things about him. I've already said he is really very much of a leader. I mean, you can say, oh, isn't that a terrible thing he called? I mean, the man has very strong control over a country. Now, it's a very different system, and I don't happen to like the system. But certainly in that system, he's been a leader far more than our president has been a leader. We have a divided country.
Some of the residue of the 2016 presidential race are questions about the involvement of Russia. The hacking of the DNC and Hillary Clinton's campaign chair John Podesta's email, the Trump campaign's ties to Russia through his former campaign manager, and recent allegations by a Russian diplomat about contacts between the Russian government and Donald Trump's, quote, immediate entourage during the campaign. Well, here to talk about all of this and possibly connect some of the dots are Malcolm Nance. He's a career U.S. intelligence officer, and he's got a new book called The Plot to Hack America, How Putin's Cyber Spies and WikiLeaks Tried to Steal the 2016 Election. Malcolm Nance, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Good morning. And joining us from Russia, from Moscow, Russia, is Ivan Necheparenko. He's a reporter, a writer for The New York Times. And Ivan, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
You're very welcome.
Ivan, let me begin with you. You're there in Russia. What's been the response from the Russian people to Donald Trump being our president-elect? I know the Duma broke out in applause. How about the Russian people?
It depends whom you call, whom you mean by the Russian people. Do you mean the Russian government or the Russian public in general?
The Russian public in general.
Well, we spoke with some of the people on the streets of Moscow, and most people said that they were not interested in the campaign very much. In terms of preference, they said that they saw that Donald Trump is against homosexuals and against women, and some of them even supported it. Hmm. But I think the main point is that they saw Hillary Clinton as inherently pro-Russian. They also said that the system, the American system, is pro-Russian too, or against Russia too, and they doubted that Trump, despite all of his big statements, will be able to do much to mend Russia-U.S. relations.
Why did the Duma break out in applause?
Well, I think they broke out in applause because it confirmed their beliefs. It confirmed what they were saying all along, that the Western public isn't satisfied with the liberal leadership and that it wants a fundamental change, that the type of leadership that President Putin presents is superior to the type of leadership presented by Western democracies. It kind of elevated them to a new level.
Let me ask you about a story that you had this week in the Times. The headline says Russian officials were in contact with Trump allies, diplomat says. When you read down, it's not quite as clear as that headline, but take us through the scenario, and then we'll get Malcolm Nance in on the conversation. What happened?
Oh, well, he said that the representatives of the Russian embassy in Washington were in regular contact with Trump's campaign because they wanted to clarify his statements on Russia. And they said that this is a routine thing, that they do this work all the time and there's nothing special about it. But the thing about it is that they have never announced it before. This was the first time they've announced it, and they've never announced it during the campaign. They always said that they're impartial and they don't care who's going to win the election, but following the campaign, it seemed that they had more contacts with the Trump's camp than with Hillary Clinton's camp.
Well, yeah. And it was described as the immediate entourage. One would assume that those are people closest to Donald Trump?
Yes. Yes, this is the phrase they used, the formula they used, the immediate entourage.
Malcolm, let me get you in on the conversation. You have this new book called The Plot to Hack America. What kind of fingerprints do you see from the Russians, maybe even Russian President Vladimir Putin, on our past election?
Well, first, let me note that this book was written before the election occurred. As a matter of fact, it went to print about 4 weeks. Actually, it came out in the public about 4 weeks before that. So all of the information that I have comes from before September of this year. And what we did was an intelligence analysis of all the activities which were occurring around the DNC hack, and then broke it out and you know, cross-correlated that with the political activities that were occurring between Moscow and the Trump campaign. And you could clearly see what we call in the intelligence community a scripted operation.
For those of us not in the intelligence community, I mean, there are these dots. And, of course, the challenge is to try to connect them. One doesn't want to overstate it, but there are these dots sitting out there.
Oh, yes. There are a lot of dots out there. And as I write in the book, that you actually have to put systems, people, manpower, and activities in place in order to carry out an operation. So if we use as our what we call a datum, our initial point of operations, the DNC hack – as the cybersecurity companies did an analysis of the malware that was introduced into the Democratic National Committee headquarters, they found that this malware had been used in numerous operations in other parts of Eastern Europe, and that was directly connected by several different governments to the Russian intelligence agency, the FSB, and Russian military intelligence, the GRU.
And the FSB is what was the KGB,
formerly the KGB. Just a name change. They removed the border guards and changed their names first to the FSK, then the FSB. And it is the KGB as we know it traditionally.
So what does that tell us?
Well, it tells us that the KGB is a very traditional organization, and the FSB, as its inheritor of all of that manpower, resources, and corporate knowledge, has never changed operations. FBI former double agent, Naveed Jamali, and he worked for them in the 2000s, doing the same activities that the KGB had done since its inception, you know, in its previous iterations as the NKVD and the MVD under the communist regime. So what we have is a corporate body, intelligence agency that is dedicated to executing the will of the autocrat in chief, who was the former director of the KGB, Vladimir Putin.
Let me go back to you, Ivan. Anything that Malcolm said, does that fit your analysis, your understanding of Putin, the KGB, Russia, and the 2016 election?
Well, the thing is that Russia is a fundamentally weak country that wants to be a great power, and it uses all means possible to make itself relevant on the international arena, and the hacking that with all likelihood it committed on the state level, they fit into this agenda. So what you see is a desperate attempt by Russia to be relevant. And you were saying before that the Russian Duma deputies, they were applauding Trump's victory, and they were basically applauding the fact that Russia was so central to the U.S. election and Russia's candidate won, which confirmed that Russia is relevant, it's rising from its knees, it is a resurgent country that will have a great future. This is their belief.
And the idea that a President Trump is better for Russia than a President Hillary Clinton? Ivan?
Yes. Well, the idea is there that Trump has said good things about Putin, and he's prepared to be pragmatic about the issues that separate Russia and the U.S., namely Syria and the Ukraine conflict.
But can we say, Ivan, you know, once the head of the KGB, always the head of the KGB, and I'm talking about Vladimir Putin?
Mm-hmm.
Yes?
He wasn't the head of the KGB. He was the head of the successor agency. The KGB was separated into several agencies. My colleague said, the military intelligence service, the internal intelligence service. He was the head of the FSB, which is tasked with internal security but has operations beyond Russia's borders as well.
Mm-hmm. And I guess, Malcolm, what I'm trying to get to is inside the head of Vladimir Putin to some degree.
Yeah, as a matter of fact. that is a motto. Once KGB, always KGB. He started out as an actual KGB officer in the early 1980s. He ran East German operatives over into West Germany to steal computer technology, ironically enough. And then when he left there after the fall of the Soviet Union, he went over to the successor organization, the FSK, after helping the mayor of St. Petersburg, and then went on to become an acolyte of Boris Yeltsin. And it was his loyalty as a former KGB officer and bringing KGB officers into the structure that was selling off former Soviet assets that got him to become prime minister, then elected it to president. But he views them now. He's actually reconstituting the all the branches that were under KGB back into that an organization that's very similar, solid state security. He views them as what he calls the new nobility of Russia. And you, all the oligarchs, everyone who has his favor must have an FSB or a KGB officer on their staff.
One of the things that you say in your book is that you believe Russia and perhaps Vladimir Putin was even cultivating Donald Trump as an asset. I mean, that would mean, in a sense, sort of turning him into a Manchurian candidate to some degree. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, it's funny enough. It was Trevor Noah at The Daily Show that said Donald Trump is like the Manchurian candidate who's running on the platform as being the Manchurian candidate. So Putin didn't have to try very hard. There's a difference between term of art, because Mike Morrell, former deputy director of the CIA, called him an unwitting agent. An agent is someone who is actually working actively for you. Anyone can become an asset, especially an unwitting asset. Mm-hmm. And what you do is we put what are called invisible strings all around you, and you are groomed through an agent recruitment process, which the acronym is MICE.
But are you thinking this happened with Donald Trump?
I think it did happen. I think the origin of that occurred when he went to the Miss Universe pageant in 2012. He was surrounded by oligarchy money, real people with real hard hundreds of millions of dollars of cash, and he adopted the entire party platform of the Kremlin, which is dissolution of NATO, getting rid of the European Union, allowing Russia to do as it pleases on its borders. And he managed to run this entire campaign on Moscow's platform.
Well, let's take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Malcolm Nance, career U.S. intelligence officer. He's got a new book called The Plot to Hack America, How Putin's Cyber Spies and WikiLeaks Tried to Steal the 2016 Election, here with us in our Philadelphia studio. And joining us from Moscow is Ivan Necheparenko. He's a reporter, a writer for The New York Times. And we are talking about the 2016 election, trying to understand some of the connections there, the possibility of connecting some of the dots, the involvement of Russia in this campaign. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And do stay with us much more after this very short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Ivan, let me go back to a piece that you wrote earlier this week, and I'm quoting here. Law enforcement officials said their investigations found no direct link between Mr. Trump and the Russian government in the hacking of the Democrats' computers. They also found no conclusive evidence of financial connections between Mr. Trump's associates and Russian financial institutions. Can you add anything to that, put some flesh on the bones there?
Well, it is true that we're just connecting the dots. Officially, we haven't seen any confirmation that or evidence that there's any direct link between Trump and Trump's campaign and Russia, apart from the contacts that we've mentioned earlier, that the embassy had contacts with some people around Mr. Trump. I'm not sure there's much else to say here.
Mm-hmm. Well, Malcolm, let me go back to you. Can we assume if there is any kind of involvement of another country, we're talking obviously about Russia, that the FBI or parts of the FBI are investigating this? Can we assume that or not necessarily?
Well, not necessarily, but you certainly wouldn't know. And I think that's very interesting, the statement that you read. They said law enforcement officials.
Right.
Well, this is not a matter of law enforcement yet. This is a matter of intelligence and counterintelligence. The FBI has two branches to it, really. It has a law enforcement branch, and then it has a counterintelligence branch, the spy catchers. They are two entirely different worlds. That component, the spy catchers, belong to the intelligence community. When the president, the National Director of Intelligence, James Clapper, and the Director of Homeland Security, Jay Johnson, came out in October and made, unfortunately on the same day that Donald Trump's video came out, made a statement saying that the consensus of the entire U.S. intelligence community and the national security apparatus was, we have evidence that Russia has done these hackings. They did these hackings before. So that being said, that is where there may be an active investigation within the intelligence community. And then once it gets, we gain information from either our allies, which there have been some news reports that our allies may have fed us information that at least one person, Carter Page, claims to have been in Moscow in July and had promised that he would raise, that President Trump would raise sanctions on Russia. That did not come from U.S. intelligence. That came from a foreign intelligence agency.
Hmm.
That would have to go through a FISA court. And then once that warrant was acquired, the Justice Department would open an investigation.
Ivan, let me go back to you. And you mentioned the fact that from Putin's perspective, as you understand it, having a better relationship with the United States would improve his status, his standing in the world. Is that, you think, in part why he was supportive of Donald Trump? Did he know that he was going to win somehow?
Well, he wants to prove that he was right all along. He made many statements about how the West was wrong, how the West is meddling into other states' affairs. And for him, Trump's elevation to the highest post in the U.S. is proof of his being right. So what we're going to see is that he is going to look for actions from Trump to confirm these views. So, of course, he sees this as an opportunity to, and not just that, he also sees other, the Brexit, the recent elections in the former Soviet Republic of Moldova, where a pro-Russian candidate won, and in Bulgaria, as proof of his worldview.
Malcolm, you want to add something?
Yeah, and he's absolutely right about that. Russia is carrying out right now something which we don't do in the West, and it's called hybrid warfare. Whenever they want to affect a political strategy, so to speak, and right now this is, you know, burnishing Vladimir Putin's autocracy and trying to prove Russia, which is in dire economic straits, to at least for the internal consumption of the people in Russia, he carries out activities which burnishes those credentials, so to speak. The war fighting that they're doing in Syria right now by launching strategic bombing raids, moving a decrepit aircraft carrier down there, that's all for public consumption. But at the same time, bringing General Flynn, right, former director of Defense Intelligence Agency, to the table next to him at Russia Today Gala means to the people in Russia that he has people in the West under his roof, which is a Russian phrase, which means that Vladimir Putin has co-opted them. This is for the optics of his own belief that they are a weakening superpower, and he is burnishing those credentials. And by carrying out political warfare, cyber warfare, all of that equals hybrid warfare. And he's not doing it just to us. He's doing it to our European allies as well. And he is winning.
Ivan, Malcolm mentioned Russia Today, and it's interesting to see the numbers of American journalists who are working for Russia Today. It includes Larry King. It includes Ed Schultz. It includes Jesse Ventura. How powerful is Russia Today? How influential is it?
Well, I mean, it's difficult for me to say from Russia. Russia Today is directed at the West and Western countries, so you can feel yourself whether it's powerful or not. But I think Russia Today manifests the whole difficulties that we feel in the media world. Many people cannot find suitable employment, and they're forced to seek it in with Russia Today, so or other government-sponsored outlets. basically Russia sees what the West is doing against it as a hybrid warfare as well. This is what Putin was saying all along, that there's an information war against Russia, and the only way for Russia to survive is to respond with the same. But the problem, again, is that Russia lacks the resource to respond with the same. And even though Russia today is lavishly sponsored by government money, it still is not as effective as the Western media.
Let me go with something that John McCain said. This is after the phone call between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin. Senator McCain said, "We should place as much faith in such statements about getting along as any other made by a former KGB agent who has plunged his country into tyranny, murdered his political opponents, invaded his neighbors, threatened America's allies, and attempted to undermine America's elections." This is coming from Senator John McCain. So while I'm looking at you, Malcolm, while there are these contacts and potential associations between Russia and Donald Trump and his campaign, you've got someone like Senator McCain who's saying, no, you don't.
Well, you know, it's surprising because John McCain voted for Donald Trump. But, you know, what we're looking at here, and I think the former, you know, middle of the road George Herbert Walker Bush national security realist are starting to see that maybe there's something more nefarious in this than, you know, than they're letting on. The intelligence is solid. I mean, those malware packages which were released to the DNC had been seen in shutting down simultaneously three power plants in the Ukraine, hacking the German Bundestag, hacking French television. This is a weapon system that the KGB, the FSB, actually the organization that's doing it is the SVR, right? Russian Covert Intelligence, and their Special Communication Information Service, their version of NSA. So as they do these actual activities, we have seen them before. The Russian fingerprints are dirty and they're everywhere. But you have to understand, they're not doing them for fun. We don't launch cyber weapons packages unless we have a national imperative. Russia uses them every day in terms of that. And John McCain may feel now that, you know, they have the White House and all three branches of government, that it might be safe to actually take a look at this.
Well, let's get some callers in the conversation. We've got John from, looks like, Havertown to join us. Hi, John. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I haven't seen any definitive evidence of Russia behind the attacks. It sounds like killing the messenger to me. The Democrats are distracting us from their own corruption. We have the Russian uranium deal with money going to the Clinton Foundation. The public commons being used and sold. I just don't hear a true discussion of what's going on in our government.
Okay, so fair enough. That. It's not exactly what was on the computer screen, but that is okay. I wonder, Ivan, if you could go back to you and certainly the Clinton Foundation and some of the people that were donors or are donors to the foundation raised some questions. Should we just think of this is the globalized world we live in, where there's contacts across borders, perhaps even organizations and companies are more important than countries? Ivan?
I think organizations are probably as important as countries. They're also actors that act on the international arena. I think the problem is that countries are more complex than organizations or companies. And I think, I'm not an expert in U.S. politics, but I think Mr. Trump said that he was amazed about how many things he's going to have to do as the commander-in-chief, and that he didn't realize it's going to be so difficult. And this is the thing. When he talks about Putin, he feels that Putin runs Russia as a corporation, as a real estate company. And the truth is that countries are much more complex and difficult, and they require consensus. They require a discussion to find best solutions to the pending problems that we have.
Malcolm, what I heard our caller say was, well, the Clintons did this too.
And that needs to be wiped out of the mind of everyone who is listening to this program. I am asserting that the United States, as a nation, has been attacked, not just because it attacked the Democratic Party or the Clinton Foundation or whatever, whoever the John Podesta emails. This is a cyber warfare attack using national intelligence assets and malware packages that cost billions of dollars to develop to exploit the entire United States electorate, to manipulate it, and to select a candidate to benefit from information that was stolen from them. Next week, it could be the entire Republican Party, or after that, it could be Donald Trump himself, or they could just drop the eastern seaboard of the United States power plants and plunge us into darkness. These are weapon systems. This nation needs to understand that this is a matter of patriotism, not of party or elections.
Is this a new Cold War?
Oh,
or it's a Cold War being played out in cyberspace?
It is, because Russia has the advantage. They use these weapons. I call them cyber weapon systems, even though they're just electronic packages. But they have the destructive force. You drop a power plant, you kill people who are in children who are on incubators and things like that. That's the next step. The question is, how do we respond to it? We have 25 million people right now who are cheering on this attack because it gave them a benefit. But next week, this could be, you know, the electronic Pearl Harbor that Richard Clark has been warning about for over a decade.
Let me quote something from your book. You say, no one is accusing Trump or his associates of treason, sedition, or treachery. This kind of talk should be squelched. But then you go on to write, even a cursory glance at the evidence reveals to intelligence professionals that the probability that Vladimir Putin has handled Trump and his associates, who are doing Russia's bidding without even knowing it, is well within the KGB playbook.
Absolutely. And I want to read a quote to you that's in the book as well. There was a former KGB officer when I was a very young intelligence officer. He defected, and he used to make videos the intelligence community to watch about the Russian intelligence. Let's just take away the letters. Russian intelligence operations against the United States and how they recruited agents. And the key quote in his many videos, which are now found on YouTube, was the KGB targeted egocentric people who lack moral principles, who are either too greedy or who suffer from exaggerated self-importance. These are the people the KGB wants and finds easiest to recruit. Sound familiar?
Because that's the kind of person that you can use flattery with and in a sense, get them over to your side.
The acronym is MICE, M-I-C-E, which is money, ideology, coercion, and ego. Those are the four factors where you recruit someone, whether they know it or not.
Ivan, let me go back to you. And since you're in Moscow, in Russia, there, what is the economic state of that country? As you said, it wants to be a bigger player. Certainly, its president wants to be a bigger player on the national stage. What is it like for the average Russian in that country today, if there is such a thing?
Well, the thing about the Russian economy is that it is at a stalemate now. It's not developing. It's not growing. And it hasn't been growing for several years now, and there's no prospect of it to grow in the coming years, too. The government itself predicts 2.5% growth, but it's going to lag behind developed nations, so the gap between Russia and the developed nations is going to widen. And Russia is a country where people need, Russian people, they need a source of pride to rely on in their lives. And you can see that since 2014, the Russian government used its foreign policy adventures in Ukraine, in Syria, or in the U.S. now as a source of its pride, as something that would confirm to the Russian people that they are worthy themselves, that they live in a great and worthy country, and they're part of this bigger whole that is doing great things. This is the agenda. But of course, many people inside Russia, experts, opposition people, they feel that the country is not doing enough to fix its economy and that it should concentrate on fixing its own internal problems first. And Syria is irrelevant for Russia. And even Ukraine is not as important as the economy.
How about, Malcolm, Russia without NATO? What is that like?
You know, and this is what's so surprising about the Donald Trump platform. He ran on policy prescriptions which were fantasies of Russia, of Vladimir Putin. Removing NATO means that there is no military ability for the West to respond to any Russian aggressiveness or, as Ivan said, adventurousness. So if they do choose to make a move into the Balkan states, you know, Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, or even the Ukraine, NATO is the only alliance which is there to stop them. Hmm. For the dissolution or the dismantling of NATO would be an absolute tragedy. The United States would go back to pre-World War II levels of security.
Let me read an email from a New Jersey listener. Trump won. Don't keep looking for conspiracies. Malcolm?
Well, unfortunately, this book was written in September. So, you know, there's no conspiracies. The point is that if there is what there appears to be some evidence of, and no one says that this is Donald Trump. As I said, there's no treason here. There's no sedition here. But the intelligence community does have an obligation, and so do our allies. If there are people there with what we call dirty strings, or even invisible dirty strings, well, that should come out. And to tell you the truth, I need to know, certainly as an intelligence professional, where this platform came from, why the imperatives of 70 years of United States defense policy needs to be thrown out the window, why we are aligning ourselves with an autocrat who murders reporters, imprisons his own political enemies, and if there is any money involved, because we have no idea what is in the tax returns of Donald Trump.
Malcolm Nance is our guest, career U.S. intelligence officer, author of a book called The Plot to Hack America, How Putin's Cyber Spies and WikiLeaks Tried to Steal the 2016 Election. He's here with us in our Philadelphia studio and joining us from Moscow, Russia, Ivan Necheparenko. And he's a reporter, a writer for The New York Times, and has been writing about Vladimir Putin, also writing about Donald Trump and what's been going on inside of Russia. Lines open at 1-888-477-94. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times to join the conversation. I've got two very busy screens. I'll be taking some of those calls and reading some more comments after this very short break. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. There's an email from a listener wanting to know how much hacking intelligence help Snowden given Russia. I'm not sure if you can answer that or anyone can answer that at this point, but Snowden is still in Russia. Anything you can tell us about what he's been doing?
Well, we don't know. We know that he lives somewhere in the Moscow region. We know that he meets with people from time to time, but he hasn't been in public. He sometimes he criticizes some of the new laws that are passed by the Russian parliament or signed by President Vladimir Putin. There was a big sort of anti-terrorism package that prescribed that all communications made within Russia via cell phone or via the internet need to be stored for 6 months by cell phone operators or internet operators. And he was against it. He spoke against it. He tweeted against it. So he tries to show that he is not a Russian puppet here.
What about WikiLeaks? And let me toss that to you, Malcolm Nance. And how do you see Julian Assange?
Well, before I go on, let me say a little bit about Snowden. Edward Snowden is a defector to Russia, and the national security apparatus assumes everything he took is in the hands of Russian intelligence. I worked at the National Security Agency. I just automatically know that, you know, if a man goes over with a flash drive, I don't care how you encrypt it, when you put enough computer power against it, you're going to get in it. So that being said, Julian Assange, on the other hand, and the WikiLeaks organization, which even though he believed that he was starting out with a noble cause and, you know, with the first leaks by Chelsea Manning, he has turned into a Russian laundromat. All of the information which was intercepted from the DNC and all the entities were brought out and then were turned over to WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks claims they were anonymous donations. They don't know where the information came from. But they were released in such a way, and this is why we call it a scripted intelligence operation. The morning of the DNC, the Democratic National Committee Convention in Philadelphia, core documents designed to split the Bernie Sanders wing from the Hillary Clinton wing of the party were released that morning. A week later, Donald Trump makes a statement about Pennsylvania has to be won by Republicans. If it's not, then it was stolen. Within 4 days, every document of the DNC was about the state of Pennsylvania in a package was released by WikiLeaks. He talks about Florida. Within 24 hours, every document on the state of Florida from the DNC is released through WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks cannot do this with just a few amateur hackers. You know, I've worked very large operations. These things take 40, 50, 100 people who are watching very carefully, what we call an information warfare management cell. And Julian Assange had a deep, visceral hate of Hillary Clinton, and he's made – even the Russians have sort of admitted that WikiLeaks was facilitated by the FSB.
Let me get Anton from Philadelphia to join our conversation. Anton, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
How you doing?
Good.
Yeah, I just like to make a couple comments. First of all, I think I'm a Russian immigrant. I currently live in America and consider this my home country now. But I think we're misjudging Russia on a couple things. Number one is Russia holds vast territory. I don't think any kind of its ability to grab more territory, whether it's Ukraine or the Baltic states, is necessary for Russia because they would have to support the people that live there, number one. With its struggling economy, they're unable to do that at this point. Russia just wants to assert its influence on the world, just like America, and they're doing it whichever way they can. In America, we topple regimes and install other governments. In Russia, they do cyber warfare. I personally don't see anything surprising in that.
Well, Anton, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me give Ivan a chance to respond to that. And he's saying, and it's true, Russia is a very big country. And the idea of more territory, according to Anton, is not something that Russians or its or their president wants.
Well, it isn't about the territory. It's about the minds and hearts of people. The Russian president wants to win the hearts and minds of the Russian people, and to an extent he was successful. It's just that the rules of the game that he used, the methods that he used are damaging for Russia's long-term future. That's the point. Of course, Russia does not need more territory, and we don't live in 16th or 17th century where countries would be measured by land. But we live in times when countries are measured by the influence they exert on the world arena, by influence they exert on other countries. And Russia wants to see itself as being one of the great powers. But as we've said before, the Russian economy, even the Russian military, restrain it from doing so. Russia is too small in a sense. It only has 146 million people.
Wow. Wow. Certainly less than the United States. We mentioned earlier Michael Flynn, the lieutenant, Lieutenant General Michael Flynn was in Russia for the Russia Today gala. He could be a member of Trump's cabinet. Also, talk to us a bit about Paul Manafort. He headed up the Trump campaign. He worked for the former Ukrainian president, I guess as a lobbyist, and that person, an ally of Vladimir Putin. Malcolm, can you connect some of the dots there?
Well, certainly with Paul Manafort, he was more than just a lobbyist. Based on the documents that were released from the Ukraine and their assertions from their anti-corruption investigations, he was actually a paid activist. And one of the campaigns that he was drafted to design was to opposition to an anti-NATO exercise in Crimea, in which the opposition was so big, NATO canceled an amphibious landing exercise and a defensive exercise which would have trained Ukrainian forces to defend Crimea, and it was canceled. And then within a year, Crimea is invaded and co-opted by Russia. So Paul Manafort, he has some ties there with monies that are being investigated. He was dropped from the Trump campaign. He is known to have had associates on his staff who were ex-FSB KGB officers. That is a very interesting case which demands investigation.
Evan, anything you want to add to that?
Well, I think there's a certain group of opportunists who would do much for a lot of money, and I think Ukraine was paying, well, not Ukraine, but the Ukrainian politicians, the administration of the ruling party of regions, the party of the ousted President Yanukovych, was paying money to people like Manafort to bring innovative political technology to the country.
A comment from John. Why did Obama pull the plug on missile defense in Poland? Ivan, do you have an answer to that?
Well, Russia was vehemently against this, and I'm not sure to what extent he pulled the plug. I think the program was downsized, but the program is still going on to some extent.
Let me get, it looks like David from Flemington to join our conversation. Hi, David. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you, Marty. Sure. Just two questions. If the U.S. had taken actions in Syria during the discussions of the red line and chemical weapons that led to regime change then, what do your guests think Russia would have done? And how do any actions we take now differ from then on Russia's response? Thank you.
Sure. Thanks, David. Malcolm, do you want to take that?
Sure. I wrote a whole book about it. The Middle East, Syria, and ISIS. Well, first off, if we had taken the actions which were planned at the time, that was going to be a strategic campaign to remove Syria's air force, which would have changed the entire strategic balance of the Middle East. It means they would have been defenseless against Israel in any way, shape, or form.
But didn't the U.S. and Russia, though, cooperate on
We cooperated by getting Syria to turn over what we believed at the time was all the material. So Russia worked with us because they are a client state. That is their only well, right now they're growing, and now they've got some Egypt contracts, but they're generally, that is their only client state, traditional client state in the Middle East. It is a source of, you know, of income, but it's also, you know, a partner that they wanted to keep in power. And by removing, you know, these Syrian air defense and air force assets, Assad would have been exposed to anybody. It would have been the end of the Syrian regime.
Well, and I wonder, Ivan, what kind of support is there in Russia for the policy that we're seeing carried out in Syria? Is there a concern it will become Russia's Afghanistan in a way?
Well, not yet, at least. People, it doesn't affect people's direct lives very much as of now. But, of course, this will grow as we, unfortunately, might see more victims coming back. The thing is that the Russian media landscape is dominated by state-run news media, and they portray the Syria operation as an effort by Russia to prevent terrorists who fled to Syria, many terrorists from the North Caucasus, from the Russian North Caucasus, from coming back home. So, and people, this is the message people, the only message that people see. They don't see the alternative message.
Let me read an email from Anne-Marie. She says, Snowden did not defect to Russia. The U.S. revoked his passport while he was in Russia, planning to go to South America, so he got stuck. Fact. That's to you, Malcolm.
No, not a fact. As a matter of fact, it's come out that he made trips while in Hong Kong to the Russian embassy. Anyone who takes sensitive United States intelligence, the highest classifications of United States intelligence, puts them on a flash drive, goes to China, then from China goes to Russia, and then ends up in Russia. He would not have been safe anywhere in the world other than where he is right now today or in Beijing. He's a defector. That's a fact.
Let me see if I can read some more comments here. One from Roy, a heavy dose of irony in this. Seems Russia has been learning from the past, master of interfering with other countries' elections and society, the good old U.S. of A. But I think what Roy is saying is it's not like we don't spy on people. I'm assuming, Malcolm, that we're doing some version of what we've been talking about to some degree.
Well, you know, and back in the old Cold War period, I mean, we overthrew Mossadegh in Iran, and you know, that was a very different era before 1973 when the real investigations into the, you know, activities that even the president didn't know about, where we were influencing policies and buying leaders. This is a completely different animal. Mm-hmm. You recall at that same time when President Nixon ordered the DNC headquarters in the Watergate Hotel, where I was just gave a speech on cyber operations the other day. That was a scandal, because they had gone in to steal information from their political opponents. Russia just did that against the United States, but were successful this time. No one was caught. And to a certain extent, we don't dedicate our cyber warfare assets to doing this on a day-to-day basis. Mm. This is policy of Russia.
But are you also saying where is the outrage?
Yeah, absolutely. Where is the outrage? I mean, the United States here, again, everyone in this country, if you had your personal emails exposed, every one of them, something damaging can be found about you or manufactured. Several of those emails were manipulated, what we call black propaganda. And some were, you know, and there's fake emails all over the internet. But the point is that the American democracy was hacked, not the Democratic Party. And if you support the hacking of Russia, you support Russian intelligence operations and what they could do to the United States. It's as simple as that.
Let me get Terrence from Cherry Hill, New Jersey, to join our conversation. Terrence, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I am simply amazed that a whole hour is devoted to this so-called connection between Russia and Trump, based on speculation and conjecture. If there was any truth to what, not a single agency has officially come out and said that it was Russia that was involved. And if there was any truth to it, the proper channels would have been the government of the United States would have taken through diplomatic channels with Russia. And at this time, John Kerry was meeting Lavrov, the foreign minister of Russia, every other day. And to say that Russia had any connection, this is totally absurd, because in my opinion, I think the mainstream media lost its favorite candidate, and now you're just pining over her loss. And your New York Times correspondent in Moscow, New York Times, endorsed Hillary Clinton.
Terrence, let me just jump in here. The New York Times, their editorial page did. Our guest, Ivan, works for the news side of the New York Times, which is very different. But let me just take your point there, because I know that Malcolm wants to respond.
Yeah. Let me.
He's saying this is bunk.
Sure. In 75 days, when President Trump takes the Oval Office, the U.S. intelligence community will still have this opinion. This is what we call intelligence fact. 17 organizations got together, reviewed all of the information, including our National Security Agency, Cyber Command, and the President of the United States came out and made an official announcement that all of U.S. intelligence has a consensus, that we have the evidence that Russia has done this, we know which agencies have done this, and that we may actually do retaliation against them. If you haven't been paying attention to the news media, it's because you're probably not listening to real news media. So for the most part, United States government, official position, intelligence fact, and President Trump himself may have to actually carry out the attack on the entities that did this against the United States.
Evan, we're almost out of time here. Any last word before we say goodbye?
Well, I think it is very important what we are talking about here. And we disagree that it's insignificant, I think. Trump has been at the center stage in Russia, and the same with Russia in the U.S. And this constitutes a fundamental change. We need to understand why it happened, and what will it mean for the future. So it's very important.
Well, I appreciate you joining us today in Radio Times, Ivan. Thanks so much. And that's Ivan Necheparenko. He's a reporter, writer for the New York Times, based in Moscow. Malcolm Nance, thank you for joining us as well.
It's my pleasure. До свидания, Ivan.
And he's a career U.S. intelligence officer, author of a book called The Plot to Hack America. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times. Lots of comments here. Two screens that are kind of screaming at me here in our studio. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Thanks for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times.